apparently studied for close to 15 years in Worms, and then he returned to Troyes. When he returned, he had notebooks full of glosses, commentaries. He was a very organized person, and it is from those notebooks that he developed his commentary. The notebooks were called Kuntres. And in fact, when Rashi's first commentary to the Talmud when it became common in the yeshivas, Rashi wrote it anonymously. He did not put his name to it. And it was just called the Kuntres, the notebook. And you'll find his grandchildren in the Tosafos many, many times, most of the time, refer to Rashi not by his name, but by the name of the... They say, in the notebook it said, Pirush HaKuntres. That's what it said. And Rashi revised his commentary, as I said, at least once. Most scholars think that he did it twice. And therefore, there are sections of the revision that are missing. And in our Talmud, therefore, we don't have Rashi to certain areas in the Talmud because that revision was never complete. He died before he finished that last revision. And they did not want to publish it with the earlier commentaries because apparently Rashi did not feel that that was exactly correct. Rashi came and he established a wine business. Now here's an interesting facet of Jewish life in the Middle Ages. Jews were in the wine business. In France especially, Jews were very, very big in the wine business. The reasons for that I discussed last time. Jews needed wine for themselves. And the only way you could get kosher wine was that Jews should manufacture it. The Jews had a natural affinity for it, apparently, and it combined a minimum of agricultural skills, because to grow great grapes was not that hard if you were in the right climate, with a certain amount of technical skills of aging the wine and of merchandising skills and selling the wine. And the Jews were suppliers to many of the great houses, many of the great manors of the lords in France. Apparently Rashi also had substantial customers. Most of the reports of the time indicate to us that Rashi was a man of wealth, relatively speaking. His grandson, for instance, Rabbeinu Tam, is reputed to be a very wealthy man. Rashi's wealth was used for the establishment of a yeshiva. And this became the Ashkenazic tradition throughout first Western Europe and then Eastern Europe until our time, until the 1800s. Yeshivas of the kind that we have today were unknown till about 1825. How the system worked was that a great rabbi, a great teacher, at his own expense or at the expense of his community, established a school for learning that many times was housed only in the building of the shul and did not have a special edifice and it did not have a special curriculum, and the bright young men of the area came to study, they came to learn, and they stayed differing lengths of time, but that was part of the task of being the rabbi in the community. Was the establishment of this house of study. That was certainly true throughout all of Eastern Europe from the 14th century onward. And that's what Rashi had. Rashi had a large yeshiva in Troyes, but Rashi's main efforts in study and in learning and in his development of Torah were within his own family. And that's the point that I made originally. We're talking here about a family. Rashi only had daughters. He had three daughters. And he married them off to three of his students in the time-honored tradition already mentioned in the